Morning, Phil.
Good morning, sir.
How are you this morning?
I am feeling particularly energised this morning. I've had two shots in the dark and I've got my run shoes on.
I've had two coffees as well.
Yeah.
This is, you've converted me, mate.
It's a good start.
It's getting more and more serious, this.
We need Gemma on the coffees. We need her drinking more coffee and then we're there.
The listeners go up, then that's going to happen, isn't it?
That's right.
So the running shoes are on.
The running shoes are on, yes.
Because today we're talking about the marathon training.
Marathon training.
We've got, we've had a lot of questions in from the listeners out there that want to pick your brains on marathon training because you've been working with marathon runners in the endurance field for the last 10 years. So you've got a lot of experience in this field from the beginner starting out running through to the more seasoned marathon runners. We're going to cover, so later on in the podcast we'll be covering things like hills, sprints, heart rates, intervals, all those juicy topics for the more expert ones, and then the beginners as well.
I've been really looking forward to this podcast, and I just would like our listeners to know that I've not been allowed to prepare anything for this podcast. I've been told by the producer and the other guys that I'm not allowed to prepare. I just need to answer your questions and try and give you some nuggets to help you with your marathon running, and whether that be your first marathon or your 10th or your 50th marathon, try and help you have a better day at the office.
Cool. So let's start at the beginning, because it's always good to start at the beginning. So we'll start with the beginner.
Marathon starts at the beginning.
It does. When was your first marathon?
I actually ran a marathon quite late. I didn't run my first marathon, although I'd been coaching marathons prior to. Run my first marathon until 2010.
2010. How many have you done now?
It depends if you include the Ironman marathon with or not. So if you.
Okay, how many have you run complete? Just the marathon.
Not the. How many times have I completed the marathon distance, or actually where you get a medal around your neck at the end? Because in training, I'm a guy who likes distance.
Okay.
So I've run 42.2 kilometres in training. There was a stage where I was doing that once a week.
Okay.
Because I like to run. This is fun. So in terms of covering a distance of 42 kilometres and above, 50, 60 times.
Right, okay. And how many times you got the medal?
How many times I got the medal? I got the medal 17 times.
Right. And that's just the marathon on its own?
Yeah.
And how many times have you done it with an Ironman as well?
Seven times with an Ironman.
Cool. Yes. So you've covered a lot of marathons.
Yeah, I've been out there.
Yeah. So where did you start? Where do you start as a beginner?
You go for a run.
Cool. How
far? You get out there, and what you don't do is you don't go online, and you don't Google which shoes should I have on, and you don't Google a training program, and you don't do anything like that. You go into a run shop, you avoid a run analysis in the run shop.
Why do we avoid that?
It's just, I think the mechanics of that perhaps, it's a good place to start. It's actually a good question. I'm going to try and do it quickly because I know we've got loads to cover.
Yeah.
So simply put, you go into a run shop. I mean, it's not all run shops, but the majority of the run assessments you see, they'll look at the heel bone at the back of your foot, and they'll look at the heel bone if it goes in or if it goes out. And that it has pretty much none to little effect on what's happening in the rest of your foot.
Okay.
So there's 26 bones in your foot, thousands of joints, thousands of joint variations. The options or possibilities of how your foot could look in that shoe is you're looking at one of the thousands of possibilities by having the film at the back. Where the heel bone is at the back in relation to your leg has very small is relevant, but is one of the relevancies of many relevancies of that. So buying a pair of shoes based off that is just as much guesswork as it is just picking a pair off the shelf.
That sounds really interesting. I think we should maybe do something on a little bit more of the intricacies of that later on for sure. But yeah, we'll stick with the basics. So we just go out for a run.
Yeah, you find a pair of shoes. You do need some run shoes. I mean, running in your stilettos should only be done under the influence of alcohol. You know, you find a pair of shoes that's comfortable.
Yeah.
Find a nice pair. I mean, if you're using any of the top brands, New Balance, Brooks.
Yeah.
I've run in New Balance and Brooks myself, but Nike. You know, you find a good pair of shoes, and you go out and you, I don't know, you try and run for 10 minutes and see how you go.
Yeah. Okay. And then where do I take it?
Yeah. That's it. I mean, now
is that how long do you just increase? How simple does it stay for the beginner?
But it should be simple, and it shouldn't be complex. And I think the most important thing about it is, for me, when I see marathon runners who are tired of running, is not the running they're tired of.
Yeah.
They're tired of the confusion of should I be on the front of my foot? Should I be on the back of my foot? Where should I land? Should I run intervals? Should I go up and down hills? What should my heart rate be? What's my pacing? What should I eat? Should I run tomorrow? Should I run this morning? Should I have done this? What about my stretching? Should I be doing strength training? What about core stability? And it's just in that total mess.
Yeah.
Going for a run is forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, and the people are running along, and you call it psychological running.
Yeah.
You know, they're running along thinking about everything else other than, that's a nice tree. You know, wow, there's a lake over there. Look at that. Never seen that before. Exploring the local area, or being on way on business, or travelling and having the opportunity to go out and explore the local area. Just go out and say, I mean, I went for a run last weekend down sort of with national championships for cycling.
Yeah.
And I went for a run and I just thought I'd go for 30 minutes. Went left, went right, went right, went left, didn't really know where I was going, ended up on the top of a fantastic hill with a view over, you know, you could see for miles.
Yeah.
And I could see my hotel, and just ran back down the hill and round the corner and back to the hotel, and ended up going and just exploring the area without a heart rate monitor or anything like that. So I think the start is running. Just find the love for running, and that's easy.
Yeah.
Because everyone loves running.
Then where do we build that from? Where do we build it to? How do we build it up? How quickly? Is it a fast process, slow process?
I think people tend to be nowadays in a rush.
Yeah.
And they're really just desperate to have that medal hanging on the office wall or at home up there. And it's sort of like, yeah, well, I need to have that. I just need to. The question is, how quickly can I be ready for a marathon?
And how quickly can it be?
If you're stubborn enough, you can go out tomorrow and you'll get through a marathon.
How good would that be for me?
It'd be awful. And that's the thing that really, I mean, so many people say, I ran a marathon, never doing that again.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, preparation is everything, and enjoying the process of preparing for a marathon, it can be fun.
Yeah.
It can be an enjoyable process. It can feel good. You can run a marathon. Of course it hurts. Of course it's uncomfortable, but that's what you train for. That's what the enjoyment of it.
The pain, the hurt that you feel, is that, because I've never run a marathon, so what type of hurt is that? Is it body? Is it more the heart, the lungs? Where do most people suffer with kind of pain?
I think when we're talking marathon distance there, I mean, some people, you because of the speed you're running at, and especially beginners, even good beginners, you'll feel it in your legs rather than your lungs.
Yeah.
The top end, perhaps they have a little bit more demand on the lungs, but over that distance, it is because you're so aerobically low. You know, you're not crossing over into anaerobic.
So this is why we don't need as much science of heart rates and stuff like that. We're pretty much just prepping the legs.
Yeah,
you're prepared to be able to cope.
There's a huge misconception at the moment in the marathon running world of running slowly.
Yeah.
And it's prescribed of lots of long, slow kilometres.
Is this for everybody you're talking about now?
Everybody.
Right, okay.
This is the sort of, it's not new advice. It was very popular in the 90s and early 2000s, and then everybody went over to, no, the only way through is intervals, lots of speed, lots of power, run fast, and now it's starting to come back again of just running long, slow duration and doing nothing else.
Why does it keep going through these phases? Is that because they're just, why do they change their minds?
Yeah, but I think it's because they don't know. And I think because it
is
works.
That because everybody's an individual?
Yeah,
and some people are suited to going for the longer, slower, and some people work better off sprints.
Yeah, and I think that especially in the, you know, we look at what the top marathon runners are doing in the world and everyone copies it with forgetting that the top marathon runners in the world are running 250, 300 kilometres a week and we're running 45 kilometres a week. You know, so I think that's the big misconception. You shouldn't, even as a marathon runner that runs a sub-three-hour marathon, you shouldn't compare yourself to the guys running sub-220. You're not in the same league. Their training is totally unapplicable to your training. It's just two different worlds. It's two different sports.
Yeah.
I mean, energy systems over 2 hours or 4 hours are very different. You know, these guys are down running around 2 hours. They've got to perform for 2 hours at intensity, where the first time marathon is potentially running for 4 or 5 hours. It's just a different. The systems are completely different in the body, and it shouldn't be compared.
Yeah. So going back to kind of how do we build a program? Then we said that you can go out and just run. I could just go out tomorrow and run a marathon and I'd be in a world of hurt. What would you say is the recommended minimum for me to, or recommended amount of time for me to go out and run that marathon and enjoy it and not be in the world of pain? Would it be 12 weeks? What would it be?
Yeah, I think that's it's a wonderful question because it's not really a sort of... it's very difficult for me to answer. Again, I don't think people should be in rush, and I think people should enjoy the process and try and find the love for running rather than running after having a medal hanging. Yeah. That's more important for me. But again, are we talking about a totally untrained individual, someone who hasn't done it before? Yeah. I would say they need a year.
Right, okay.
To do it correctly. I mean, I'm lucky enough to have nearly a 100% injury-free record. Don't have injuries with my marathon runners. They don't have problems.
Which is a common, like, I mean, that's most people complain of, like, the knee, the outside of the knee, for example.
Yeah, with classic runner's knee. But they're all injuries that are because of the impatience of the person. And, you know, we always talk about injuries being a psychological, but because of impatience, because of I need to do it now, I need to push, I need to do it, you do too much too soon, you end up with those pains where if you can enjoy the process... and follow the process through. Injuries are programming based. They're not unlucky. They're programming based. Also, from a strength training perspective, flexibility perspective, and sort of volume.
Yeah.
Volume of intensity and volume of volume.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot to it.
There's a lot to it, but as long as the balance is right, injuries shouldn't be a case.
So let's go back to that running slowly.
Yeah.
Just going out and just not getting caught up in speed. Like, what's so good about, why do you recommend that?
If I may, I'll just give a little bit of history of the science behind it and where it's gone.
Yeah,
And then give it a little bit of a description on it and why, because it's very fashionable currently to be running slow.
Okay.
So,
That'd be great to hear.
Yeah.
It's all new.
Yeah. Okay. So running in the late 90s was very much about miles and just getting miles in your legs. And as I say, we went into the 2000s where it then became very much about intervals and running fast. And now we're going back to that running slow process as previously discussed. And the misconception and the misunderstanding is that it's aerobic and heart and lungs based. We tend to, as endurance coaches, not look at the neuromusculoskeletal side of things. We tend to look at the energy systems or the cardiovascular side of things, i.e. heart and lungs. And we tend to attribute all performance improvements to improvements within the cardio system in terms of VO2 max or a lactate threshold, etc. And so what happened was people went out and started running slowly and long distances and got better misunderstood, totally misunderstood, why they got better. It was attributed to an aerobic capacity development because you were running slowly, you were training your aerobic system, and your aerobic system was then developing, and that's why you improved as a runner. And while we went to short and hard intervals in sort of early 2000s and through the 2000s was because we wanted to have a greater development of the cardiovascular system. And that still stands true today. The cardiovascular development is greater with shorter, harder efforts. And that's pretty, and you know, that's overloading the system and having the system working harder. But as I said, people ran faster running slow. So we've got that, we've got a bit of a problem. We know that the energy systems and the heart and the lungs have a greater demand and develop with short and hard intervals, but everybody's running faster when they go out and run slow. And the science is right and the research is right. The understanding of why in my book is wrong. It's not because of aerobic development. It's simply strength training. And the faster I run, the greater the momentum is. So the more momentum I have, the easier it is for muscles to hold me up, the less they have to work. When I start to run slowly, and if we say walking lunges is running slowly, the slowest you could run, we say, would be a walking lunge, and the fastest you could run would be sprinting.
Yeah.
When you're sprinting, what you're doing is you're using what we call sort of elastic contractions within the muscle. So it's pretty much the tendons. That are using the elasticity that's stored in the tendons is firing and moving you forward. So muscles are doing very little. Stability comes from the fact that we're moving forward.
So is that why people kind of feel more, so you obviously you talked about the programming of it all as well, but if they're using the joints more, sorry, the elastic property of the muscle, is that why people then end up with kind of the more tendonitis? Base injuries because they're faster and more able
people,
to.
People tend to, when they begin with interval training, they tend to get that tendinopathy. They tend to get those tendon problems, and they get those tendon problems because they're running faster. So the demand on the muscle is diminished, and the demand on the tendon is increased, and so we get the tendinopathies.
So do we need stronger tendons or do we need stronger muscles?
Well, that's a great, that is the question. And it comes back to scheduling, programming, preparation, and organisation of the athletic programming. The misconception was we run faster. We see our times come down. We go out and run slowly. So we instantly attribute it to heart and lungs. And when we run faster and harder, we have tendon injuries. So that's bad. And coincidences aren't wrong. You know, that is right. That is what happens. I just think the understanding of why that happens has been misunderstood and is written poorly. When we do that walking lunge, we are stand on one leg. Because running is based on one leg. The faster you run, the more time you'll be on one leg. Okay, so if you're just standing on one leg, the amount of elite marathon runners that can't stand on one leg is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, you ask an elite marathon runner just to stand on one leg and balance, and they fall over. Yet they can run at 20 kilometers an hour for 42 kilometers, you know. And they do that because the speed they're running at is the momentum that balances them and provides the stability for them. So if you go from a standing on one leg to a walking lunge, through to a light jog, through to a little bit of a faster jog, through to running an interval, you go through this process of actually muscles, even though after intervals the muscles hurt more, even though after running hard I feel greater soreness the day after, you are still not using, you're using tendon and lower muscular sort of junctional elasticity. So actually what happens when we run slowly is we're almost doing a form of strength training for the musculature and stabilizing of the joints and everything else. So people run fast and get better because, I mean, one of our classics is you're sending them out for a run elite runners and tell them to run 6 minute kilometers for 35-40 k's. It's not a huge demand for the system for them. It's not hard for them because they're used to running at 4 minute kilometers for so you're giving them almost 60% away from it and say, look, this isn't a run.
Yeah.
This is a 4 hour strength training session for you. You know, nice if they can do it in terrain. Nice if they can go out and see something. Nice if they can do it as a group. But sending them out to get strong.
So as a beginner, like going back to the beginner, we've obviously mentioned a lot of things there, like strength training factors, flexibility, nutrition, everything like that. Like how much of that side of things is needed for the beginner versus the more experienced athlete.
But that's the win-win. That is the win-win with it, because the beginner that starts out by going slowly and running miles isn't putting the system under as much stress as if they're going at running intervals.
So they can just prepare for the marathon by running.
I mean, always. I mean, for me, a first marathon, as I say, is always about finishing. It's never about time, and it should never be about time. The first marathon isn't. It's pressure. You have no idea what your body's going to feel like when you get out there over 35-30 k's. Even if you run it in training, you still don't know what it's like under the pressure of race day and everyone else around you and the wife and the kids. You know, the kids still think you're Superman. And why isn't Dad first?
So you said earlier about running, like you've run marathons in training before actually getting the medal.
Yes.
So was your first marathon in training, or was it actually to get a medal?
My first marathon, actually the first time I ran over 40 kilometres, I ran 76 kilometres. that's another story, but that was because
was before your marathon.
Oh, this was as a rugby player, because somebody said I couldn't do the Great Highland Way run and I couldn't run it all, so
you ran it all.
So me and a group of friends, we ran it all.
How did that go?
Yeah.
What mark did it leave?
It left a mark. It's not a mark you can see externally, but inside it stayed with me for many years.
But what about the actual marathon then? The actual marathon, did you run that marathon distance in training?
Not before.
The first marathon, 32. There's obviously the dreaded wall.
Yeah.
Everyone talks about.
Yeah.
Did you hit the wall in your first marathon or not?
I think the wall hit me. I think it was a sort of concrete slab dropped from height. I mean, I think there's three ways of hitting a wall.
Yeah.
There's the, I'm going for a record, I want to get a personal best time, and I hit the wall, which for me is totally acceptable, to go out and risk losing it to win it. you know, there's the, I'm just tired. My legs have given up. I haven't eaten enough perhaps. And then there's the final one, which is unexcusable. I thought I was a lot better than I was, so I've run too quickly and now I'm in trouble. And mine was the latter. I just, for some reason, thought I'd run it a lot quicker than I should have ever done. I didn't run those times in training.
You made the decision to try and faster, or you just got caught up
in the day, as most people do. Beginner's mistake. And the thing is people say, you know, you never get do it. Okay, so I learned a lot from it. You know, that last, I think up to 25 kilometres, if I remember it correctly, it was going after plan. I actually thought everything's fine. And then I ended up, I wouldn't walk. I do not walk. Yeah. That wasn't allowed. That wasn't an option. And I remember running along, and there was a lady pushing a pushchair on the footpath next to me, and she overtook me, but I was still running.
The shuffle.
Exactly. I hit the wall because I thought that I should run a lot quicker. I thought that bad decisions, really. So they're the three ways of hitting the wall.
So you touched on nutrition there.
Yeah.
We've had some questions on nutrition.
Yeah.
What do you eat during the marathon? Do you eat during the marathon? And if so, what do you eat during the marathon?
Yeah. I certainly drink.
Yeah. What do you drink?
I take the energy drink that's at the aid stations there, and my stomach has been fine with energy drinks, and doesn't particularly matter which energy drink it is. A lot of people like to buy the energy drink that's going to be there on the race day and then train with that.
So you're used to it.
And I did that from the start, but what I found out was that actually the energy drinks are fine for me. There's no problem.
Yeah.
I'm not one for carrying big packets and stuff with me. It annoys me, irritates me. I like to sort of have a loose baggy t-shirt on, loose baggy shorts, and sort of try and enjoy, or a vest, and just trying to sort of relax that way. Having big belts and things, it's never really been me. So I've sort of just taken, I have a plan, don't get me wrong, I always go in with an idea of, or not even an idea, a plan of what I'm going to do, but I don't ever take anything with me. I'll always use what's available on the day. And there's loads of stuff. In every marathon I've ever run, there's absolutely loads of stuff available.
What do you eat on the morning of the marathon?
Morning, beans on toast.
How far before?
I'm always a 3 hour. Always have done. Always had the last meal 3 hours before race day. Not race day. Race start. And I have all my athletes do the same. Those guys eat anything. I mean, again, it's very personal. It's very personal, and people have a good day and then relate that good day to the nutrition. So once they've had that good day on that nutrition, they tend to stick with that because they say that works for them. I don't know if it works for them, to be honest. I think it's just the coincidence of it was a good day. But psychologically, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
I think you sort of choose yourself whether you have a good day or not.
What about the day before?
The day before, I just eat a normal day. I have all my guys do
so
that.
So you don't do the carb loading like everyone talks about?
No.
Why is that?
Well, I think the best way I can describe that is if I take a water jug and I pour water in until the water hits the top of the jug, and I keep pouring water in the jug, what happens to the water?
Spills out.
Goes out all over the side. So once the glycogen stores and the depot of carbohydrate is filled up within the body, where should it go? You know, they're not endless. There's not yet been invented a vessel that can hold more than it can hold.
Yeah,
you know, I think, you know, that so in that respect, no, you know, as long as you know you're recovered and you're fresh and you've got enough food in you. What I do the day before is usually at the expo, the energy drink that is going to be given out on the race course is available. So I'll take a bottle. I'll have the guys take a bottle there and drink that during the day. It's a little bit extra, but just a normal food. I mean, the thing is you know, you go from training, running anything between sort of at my level 80 to 130 kilometers a week, and then in the race week, you're running every day, and it's important you run every day.
You're not tapering down then?
No.
Because a lot of people talk about tapering.
Yeah, tapering's becoming a bit of an old-fashioned, thing now, and that's actually really, really interesting. So the week up to your diminished training, you're not training as much as you would normally be doing, perhaps, and you're eating the same. So you're in plus. You're not in minus that week. There's no reason for overeating that week. You're fine. You're used to training on it. Your body knows what it is. It's just about continuing there. I mean, a lot of people overeat and end up putting 2 or 3 kilos on in the week up to race because it goes down. Now, some of that is because you know glycogen stores in your body weigh around 2.5-3 kilos. So when they're full, you will weigh a little bit more.
Yeah.
So it's not sort of unusual to weigh a kilo or so heavier than you've been in training the week up to a race, and that's actually a good thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all.
Mileage is coming down, but do I have a day off the day before the marathon?
No, my guys and myself, they'll run every single day the last 3 weeks up to a marathon.
No
rest days at all the last 3 weeks. Now, some of those runs are they'll go out and run for 15 minutes.
Yeah,
very easy with 6 minutes. Kilometer pace, for example, send them out just for that, but they'll run every single day, and that's important, very, very important.
Why, what is the reasoning behind that?
I mean, I think you talk to any endurance athlete across any sport, they'll tell you the day off, the day after, they can't get going. You know, lots of things happen, and the metabolic processes begin to be reversed very quickly with bodies that are so efficient. So one of the things that holds us going is that our metabolism becomes very high. The speed we have, what we call the speed of our metabolism, and we have blood flow, we have blood volume is high, and the more pressure the body's under, you have adrenaline works, the adrenal gland knows what to do, and as soon as you stop, as soon as you slow down, the body says, I'm going to start reversing these processes, and it is very, very quickly. So they get stiff, they feel bloated when they eat, they feel that the next day they just can't get started, there's fatigue, and of course, in the training up to the race, they need to feel like that because they need a day off, and they accept that. But also the psychological element of feeling dreadful within that 3 week period up to the race, it isn't good for anybody. So they'll run every day. They'll say some days it's just 15 minutes, but that 15 minute run or that 3 kilometer run is so much, because it means the day after we don't have the problem. We keep the metabolism high. I mean, we lose blood volume. We simply lose the amount of blood in our body just within 24 hours. We begin the regeneration hormonal process, and the body sort of says, we're on holiday.
Right, okay.
I'm going to start regenerating and start rebuilding you now and start putting things up. And that's the opposite to what we need. We're about to put our body into war, into a stress environment, into a performance environment. What we don't want is the body thinking it's holiday and relaxing time. And that's the sort of, now we'll answer your question about the taper. That's exactly the reason we don't taper anymore. We've stopped the tapering process almost completely. And instead of being on the way down into a race, and that's the problem, you know, I'm coming down into a race.
Yeah.
You should never be coming down into a race. You should feel like you're coming up into a race.
Yeah.
You know, you should feel like the race is the end of the sort of the peak of the mountain, rather than the anticlimactical bottom of the mountain. And so that thing, if we train really, really hard, we ruin our bodies, we smash ourselves 3 weeks before, and then we do nothing for 3 weeks, or not nothing, but we don't do a lot for 3 weeks, and then our body just starts going into rebuild and regest, and digesting and slowing everything down, and metabolism slows down, and the way we oxidize sugar slows down, and we just start getting worse. We start feeling lethargic, and we start stiffening up, and everything like this. Instead of perhaps being, you know, if I'm going to have an easy week, I'll have an easy week maybe 5 weeks out, then a couple of easy days 3 weeks out, and so the guys are feeling maybe a little bit what we call over fresh. And that's another very important element of marathon running, is you're not fresh on the day. You don't have that fresh legs where you can't get started. I think every listener out there who's run a marathon will be able to say, the day, you know, you went out, you did strength training, you ran 25 kilometers, you did some hill repeats, you didn't sleep so well, you had a couple of glasses of red wine with the wife, and you're just dreading tomorrow's run because you're tired and you don't feel like it, and you go out and you just have the best run ever. And you have the best run ever because the body's under stress, the body's prepared for it, the body knows what's coming, it's easy for the body to do it, and you go out and you just have this flow and you have this rhythm. Where completely opposite of that, people say, well, I slept all day, I laid in bed, I rested, I ate lots, and I went out the next day and I felt dreadful. You know, and I know we're going to do a podcast at some point on cramps, on cramping, but people that don't experience cramping training that then experience it on race day is down to being too fresh rather than being too tired. It's because the body says, hang on a minute, for 3 weeks I haven't run anything, I haven't done anything, you've put me under no stress, and now you want me to do this. And the nervous system starts saying, I'm going to send messages down, and muscles start contracting and going crazy. Some of the best half marathon I ever run was on the end, we used it as the end of a training camp. So a 4-day training camp and ran a half marathon. When I remember sitting down with a good friend before, saying, I don't know how we're going to get through this.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure I'm not sure we should even be here. Got out there and just felt wonderful. Just, there was so much flow in my legs, and it was my record half marathon time that day. Because the adrenaline was up, the body was ready to go, I was in that fight mode, I could oxidize sugars, blood volume was high, you know, and that's where we want to be going into a race. We don't want to, don't misunderstand, we don't want to go in tired. And the balance is a finite balance. It's difficult to get that balance right, but we definitely don't want to go into our endurance event feeling fresh.
Is that something you find with your that balance? Is that something that you see with your athletes in training, you're adjusting that? Or sometimes does it take that first marathon to find...
It takes the first 10 marathons.
To the first 10.
Yeah. I mean, you don't know who you are as a marathon runner until you've got 10 in you. It's just a learning process. It's like anything, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is you play football, or you play rugby, or you play and you go bike racing. You know, you race Saturday, you race Sunday. Or you play Saturday, you play Saturday after, and you've just got this week after week after week, this match, and you learn and you get better and better. And a marathon, you do one a year, two a year.
Yeah.
And so 10 years down the line, you haven't yet run as marathons as you've played football games that year.
Yeah.
So the learning process is a slow one and a tough one. And if the body can cope with it and control it, it's good to run more marathons. And it's good to have a marathon, a local marathon, that is used for training and used for testing something, used for finding out where am I. And you know, sometimes you play friendly games of football to test systems, or you play a game of football in training to test systems. And that can be the fun of marathon running.
So we've definitely covered the beginners. The more advanced guys have some questions.
Yeah.
Intervals.
Yes.
So where do these come into play?
Yes. I mean, I think,
how can we use them?
Let's define intervals first.
Okay.
I think that's probably quite relevant, is that intervals tend to, for some obscure reason, instantly when I say intervals, people think running fast or hard training.
Yeah.
An interval is just a variance. So if I run out for an hour at 6:00 and I run home at 5:45 per kilometer, I've just done 2 1-hour intervals.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's important to start with. An interval is just a division of your training. Doesn't mean hard, doesn't mean maximum, it can mean that.
Yeah.
It just means I've divided your training up today into sections.
Yeah.
And that's why, I mean, that's the misconception with intervals, is that, oh, I'm running intervals today, so it must be hard.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not at all. It doesn't need to be that. So the question is then, how would I like to divide your training up to give you more of what you need, or to better a particular element of your marathon training?
Okay.
And that's how you would divide intervals.
So like the understanding from the guys here is obviously, yeah, intervals being sort of shorter,
okay,
faster runs.
So you're asking me, when can I go out and push it?
When do I push? When do I back off?
Yeah, good.
Or how often as well?
First marathon,
yep.
First time you're going to run a marathon, you're going to enjoy it. You don't care about your time. The process is great. Enjoy it. Look at the crowd. See the people there. Look up. Drink, eat, and have some fun. So in that respect, drop the time. Drop the intervals. Run slow and run miles. Because as we've talked about, not because of aerobic system development, because of muscular strength and being strong enough to be able to run the distance, that's how you'll have the most fun. It's how you'll stay away from injury and you'll enjoy it. Then the next year or the next marathon, okay, right, I've done all that, feel great, now I want to run faster. Now I want to get that time, 3 hours, 4 hours, 3.5, whatever. So then you need to start finding out, can I run at these speeds?
Yeah.
So the first thing you need to do is, if you can't run at 5 minutes per kilometre, then you can't run a marathon in 3 hours 30, because so the first thing is, can I run at these speeds? You know, that's the first, is a test.
Yeah.
You know, so I might, one of my classic training sessions I have with the guys is 10 by 3K. So
10 by 3K.
10 by 3K with 3 minutes rest.
Yeah.
And that again, sometimes I tell them, okay, this is 10 by 3K at over marathon pace. Sometimes I say it's under marathon pace, sometimes I say it's at marathon pace. But, you know, let's just start with, okay, my last marathon pace was there, I want to run in this, let's go out and run 5 by 3 kilometres at 5:00. If my goal is going to be 3 hours, if it was 3:30, sorry, if it was three hours, then go out and run at 4:16, for example, per kilometre. So you just find that then and go out and let's see where we are, let's see what we're doing. And then you'll find out, you know what, I can't run at that speed.
Yeah.
Or... I can run at that speed, but not for very long.
Yeah.
So there's a huge problem there because you've got a goal of doing this, but you can't actually run at that speed. So the next thing we need to do is we need to create a lung VO2 max type response. We need to get your body better at using oxygen and better at providing the muscles with energy.
Yeah.
Because ultimately that's how you're going to move forward. A lot of the time, I think you've run long, slow distances, you've done your strength training, your lunging, etc. And so neuros, musculoskeletally, you're strong enough because you've finished a marathon. So you know you can cover the distance, so now we need to go faster, and now it becomes a lung issue. Now it becomes being able to transport oxygen more. So then we need to stimulate a response from the lungs.
Yeah.
We need to stimulate, we need to make the body better at using oxygen. So in that, supply and demand. There we need to create a demand for oxygen, so the body needs to learn how to give more oxygen to the body and to the working muscle. And that doesn't need to be all out. That perhaps just needs to be a little bit over what your planned time is. So if we're using a 3 hours 30 as an example, 5 minute kilometers, there I would say run 5 times 1 kilometer with 4:30.
Yeah.
See how it goes. You know, they've run the 5, that was fine. If you're going after 3 hours 30, you don't need to run them quicker than 4 minutes. You don't need to be throwing up at the end of the session. You know, that we know it stimulates enough of a response, stimulates enough of a...
is it lactate demand.
It's not lactate, no. And that's the misconception, is that we've always called it lactate. We've always said it's the lactate that burns in the muscles. I think that's maybe another podcast, because... Yeah. It's not lactate. We've now know it's other ions and metals and things that cause that burning. Lactate is present, but it isn't as relevant as we have thought for the last 20 years.
So lactate training isn't lactate training then?
Well, it depends on what you're... Yes, it is, because we measure it in the blood. So when you perform these types of intervals or these types of training, lactate increases in the blood.
Yeah.
So in that respect, yes, it's just the relevance of understanding lactate in the blood that might not be as important as we thought first. So we thought that was the be all and end all.
Right.
If we measure lactate, we know where we are. What we're finding out now is that might not be as possible. But that's going to take 3 hours to explain that in the detail. So I think...
We'll do another podcast.
We should perhaps make that as a topic, yeah.
Yeah. Which can be universal across...
All sports. Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. So, with these intervals, you've obviously done a lot of them on speed.
Yeah.
The heart rate.
Yeah.
Do you use intervals on heart rate? Or how do you integrate heart rate training or measuring of heart... What do you do with the heart rate?
Yeah, I mean, I think the good thing with heart rate training is, I mean, there's good and bad. There really is. And I mean, and now we're starting to be able to use watts in running, which I'm hoping, if it becomes as well researched and documented as it is within cycling, it'll be a great way to measure, just measuring pure power output. The problem with heart rate is heart rate isn't as reliable as it could be. It's good, but it you know, if you've had coffee, if you're tired, if you've slept differently, we see different heart rates. And I mean, heart rate zones are a mess. You can have all the best testing equipment in the world. You can test VO2 max, you can test max heart rate, you can calculate zones for them. And some days they're in zone 2, and zone 2's hard, and other days zone 2's easy. Some days you want them in zone 4 and they can't get their heart rate up to that zone. Other days you want them in zone 3 and they can't get the heart rate down because they're too fresh or too tired or different things. So it's, and again, you could also argue that that's perhaps a little bit of the coach's programming in that the coach should understand that. But there are some challenges with using heart rate, especially for beginners. I mean, a guy that's had a heart rate belt on for the last 15 years and every single session he's done, he knows how to control it. He knows what he's looking for. Guys just starting out with a heart rate monitor, they find that a little bit more difficult. Yeah. But I mean, the best thing, ultimately, when you run your marathon, you should never look at the speed you're running at and never look at the time you're running at. You should be able to calculate a work effort. And I know my marathon heart rate is 161. I know I can't be better than 161. Whatever time I cross the line in, I won't run with more than 161. So it's the time, the speed I'm running at is irrelevant. I'm not racing. I'm not up the front racing. You know, I'm back with the with the dads. And
what's your dad time?
My dad time.
Yeah.
My fastest marathon.
Yeah.
3 hours 19.
Work. How does that compare to the? What's the difference between where's the next level time? What's the next goal? Do you class 3:19 as a dead time? I mean,
I don't know. I know. I focused a lot on the cycling and swimming elements in my triathlon for many years, and I've never actually, after the first marathon, trained just for a marathon. I've always run a marathon as part of training for an Ironman, and usually tired. I'm just throwing out excuses here. I have no doubt I can come under 3 hours. I'm sure that will happen at some point. But no, I'm not quick. You know, all the good coaches, they were bad athletes, you know. So
strength training, we keep touching on it, but we've not really got into the depth of that. You've mentioned lunges for the heart rate and things. Where does strength training where do we feed it all in?
Strength training is probably the crucial element, the missing element in a lot of marathon programs. I'll just, if it's possible, just finish up on heart rate. I'm sorry, I didn't.
Yeah,
no, a couple of points I didn't quite get over. Which,
sorry for.
No. I know you're excited. But just
average scholar, we had a lot of questions, and we're just trying to get through those questions.
And time's running thin. So my marathon heart rate is 161 beats per minute, that's gold. I mean, being able to train and have a coach that can help you or yourself calculate what is my marathon heart rate. And I sit literally on my watch. I have two fields. I have current heart rate and average heart rate.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not better than 161 over roughly 3 hours 15. If I'm at 163, 164, average, at some point I'm gonna pay a price, and my body is going to average me out to 161. So the best way of explaining this is it's like driving a car. If I drive a car in and around the town and in the city where I change gear and I go up and down in speeds, I use petrol at a greater rate than if I just sat on the motorway in fifth gear at 100 kilometers an hour. And it's exactly the same in the body. The tempo changes, the ups, the downs use incredible amounts of energy, greater amounts of energy than if I can just hold my fifth gear on the motor with my diesel engine. You drive a diesel car with short, sharp bursts, it's not good for the car. You know, you drive a diesel car on the motorway and you drive long distances, it works for it. And that's exactly the same how the human body works within training. Or within marathon running. So in that respect, I mean, if I can run a marathon 161, but my lowest heart rate was 159 and my highest was 153, it's been a great day for me. And a lot of the analysis we'll do after the races with the athletes is, what has their variance been that day? How efficient have they run the race? How well have they been able to control that zone? And a lot of what you'll see is they go out at 170.
Because
they're excited, they get taken by the day and the event, and who wouldn't? It's fantastic, it's wonderful, you know. And then they look down at their watch after 12 kilometers and think, wow, this is going well. You know, I'm running fast. And they're using speed, and then they think, wow, I'll ease off a little bit, but it's too late. I mean, 10 minutes, 5 beats over your average heart rate, and you're going to pay a price later on. Especially when you're especially if you're pushing it on the edge, it's that finite. Yeah. I mean, 5 beats per minute over 10 minutes is enough to cost you today.
Yeah. So it's best to start off slow and build, try and account for the
no, because no. then at the end you need to at the end when you're the most tired, And
yeah, you're trying
there
not
you
hard.
Need to go over your average. Yeah. And one thing that can really stress me is finishing at 160 knowing I could have given more. I mean, it's one beat, it probably doesn't mean yeah. anything, but just psychologically, I like to know that's where I'm going to finish. So no, I mean, literally, I mean, the thing is, you stand on the start line, your heart rate's 140.
Yeah.
Because you're nervous and looking forward yeah. to it, and it's just the excitement of it. So getting it to 160, I mean, it's in the start, you run slowly. You do feel yeah. like you're running very slowly if you're keeping your heart rate at the right speed.
Is it hard just to go off at speed, though, with the because you're in such a pack of people? Does that affect
a lot of people complain about it. I've never had a problem.
Yeah.
I've never seen an issue. I always book the ticket for the time I'm going to run and start in the right start box. I always start with the right balloons.
Yeah.
There's always sort of a balloon that pace balloons always. I don't run with them personally. Yeah. I don't like running that big group. I like a little bit of space, but I always am in the right start box with people running about the same speed. I've never had a problem with it. It's never cost me a minute in a marathon. I know other people have had worse experiences, but I've run a lot of marathons and never had a problem with that. And I don't hear many stories of having that problem, to be honest. So that's how I would use heart rate.
So back to your wall day.
Yes.
When you hit the wall.
Yes.
What did your heart rate do there?
Didn't wear a heart rate monitor.
Didn't have one on. No, right. So you wouldn't. Yeah. Oh, no.
That day was me against me.
Yeah.
And I lost.
We don't have data. We have no data.
No. But I can tell you for data from the time after, where I had 174 for 20 minutes.
And what happened there?
Similar story. But again, I like to test things. I don't mind using a smaller marathon race to test things and go out and see these different things. And there's actually a funny story. The 174 over 20 minutes, there was a group of elite Kenyans at the start of the race. And on the way to the race, they were jogging in.
Jogging
at faster than my marathon pace, but they were warming up. I don't know, I don't know, but they were warming up, and I hopped on the back because that should be fun, and felt quite pressured there, and ended up that I followed them.
That's incredible.
All the way through, and ended up talking to them, and ended up standing sort of close to them on the start line, and then I was close to the front, so I thought I'm going to try and lead the race. I didn't get there. But I had a good 20 minutes doing that, and I had the time of my life, and I wouldn't have changed it for anything, because those guys are just wonderful and inspirational, and
and
I knew from there on I'm just going to have to and it wasn't a particularly bad day, but yeah. So sorry, that was the heart rate side of things, and also training with the heart rate, you then can calculate your, you know, am I at race pace, am I over race pace, am I under race pace, where is these intervals going. You can use it as much or as little as you like, but it is a good indicator of what you're doing and how much effort you're putting in, and also teaches you to train. I mean, we talk a lot about running what we call a negative split, and a negative split is it is the most crucial element of running a marathon, is running the second half faster than the first half.
Yeah,
that's the holy grail of marathon running, is being able to come in 5 seconds quicker in your second half and your first half, and you know you can't have done better than that.
We're getting close to time.
We're getting close, we're using our time. We need to cover strength training for them, perhaps we'll do running part two.
There's
some more questions about heart rate and heart rate zones and heel training and injuries and stuff which we haven't covered, I think.
We'll do that another time. Yeah. So we can give you guys everything that you've asked for.
Yeah. And a break. So,
yeah, it's been great to talk to you, Phil.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Really a pleasure.
So I'm looking at doing a marathon, so I've learned some things today. You've not put me off.
That's good.
That's good.
So wait till you see the training program, and when we start talking about that, then we'll see.
So thanks for your time today. I hope you've all enjoyed it. If you want to stick some more questions in before we do part two, then send them in, and we will try and cover them in running part two.
Take it easy, guys.